Not yet. Okay. All right. So last week at the program director's behest, there was an abridged session of this course, the content of which I will spend the first 15 minutes or so just recapping here today. So you won't have missed anything except maybe the proofs of some lemmas, which not really a matter of life and death. So let me just find a list. Yeah, so here are some of the things that I covered. So the first topic was order on the K0 group. So we're going to let A be a unit of C-star algebra. And we will set K0 of A superscript plus to be the image of the Gropendieck map of this Murray von Neumann semigroup associated to A. So remember, this was the sort of stable Murray von Neumann equivalence classes of projections in matrices over A equipped with this semigroup structure. And then you had this map, this Gropendieck map, which it basically gives you the image of B of A inside an enveloping group. Okay? So this is a subset, a cone, in fact, inside K0 of A. And we say that x less equal to y in K0 of A if y minus x is in K0 of A plus. So this is certainly reflexive and it's transitive, but it's not anti-symmetric in general, okay? But it is anti-symmetric sometimes, and that's something. So this is a pre-order. But it is anti-symmetric in an important case, which is called the stably finite case. So this is the pre-order in K0. The second thing we talked about was the notion of a finite and or infinite projection. So a projection P and A is infinite if P is Murray von Neumann equivalent to some other projection Q, and that projection Q is strictly less than P. Okay, so it's equivalent to a proper subprojection of itself, which you might imagine requires the range to be infinite dimensional. so that's an infinite projection, and otherwise P is finite. So then you say that A is finite if the unit of A is a finite projection, and A is stably finite if every matrix algebra over A is finite. Okay? And then the proposition that, in fact, we proved is that if A unit of stably finite, then this cone K0 of A plus yields an order on K0 of A. Okay, you get anti-symmetry. So anti-symmetry means x less equal to y, and y less equal to x implies y equals x. Yeah. Okay, so that's important. It's a partially ordered group. And then, okay, that's the second thing we said. The third item, let me just say one more thing. So, in this case, right, this is just a restatement of the facts, but K0, K0, A plus is A. I mean, sometimes people call this a partial order. Just say order, partially ordered abelian group. And this is quite an important feature of the K-theory of stably finite C-star algebras. It's definitely an essential part of K0 viewed as an isomorphism invariant. So today, I mean, the goal for today will be to prove this classification theorem of Elliott, which says that if you have we're just going to do it in the unital case, if you have two unital inductive limits of finite dimensional C-star algebras, and if there is an isomorphism, not just between their K0 groups, but an isomorphism between their K0 groups, which is an ordered group isomorphism, then the algebras themselves are isomorphic, and in fact, an isomorphism at the level of K-theory lifts, which is saying something even a little more than just abstract isomorphism at the level of algebras. Okay, but since those algebras are inductive limit C-star algebras, we need to know something about the K0 group and inductive limits. So, suppose is a unital inductive sequence in other words AI is unital and also the connecting map phi I is unital with limit A. It follows that the K0 group of the inductive limit, together with this positive, this preorder structure, that's equal to the inductive limit of the K0 groups of the finite stages. Okay. In other words, this K0 functor, even when you include this preorder structure, commutes with inductive limits. And we're not going to prove why that is. I mean, in the sort of abridged version of the course last week, we did say at least roughly why this is. And the idea is that K0 classes, if you have a projection in the limit algebra A, then you can find some projection at a finite stage which has the same K0 class. That roughly is the idea. So stability under small perturbations. Okay, so this is going to be an important fact for us. Here the limit, of course, is taken in the category of abelian groups together with some cone. So that's continuity of the K0 functor. What else did we talk about last? Continuous. Right, so a few facts about finite dimensional C-star algebra. So a C-star algebra A is finite dimensional if it's isomorphic to some direct sum of the following form. It's just a finite direct sum of full matrix algebras over the complex numbers M and R C. Okay, and And we had this notation that we used frequently, E, I, J, the superscript K is the I, J matrix unit of the kth direct sumand in this expression here. Okay, so it's the matrix which is equal to 1 in the ij entry and 0 everywhere else. Okay, and there are the usual relations between these matrix units in terms of taking adjoints and taking products and so on. And and if you have a set of elements indexed like this which satisfy the usual relations you would expect for matrix units, in fact they do generate necessarily a finite dimensional C-star algebra. And let me just also mention what the ordered K0 group is there, since we'll need that today. So K0 of this direct sum is the direct sum of the K0 groups. We knew that already. And it's just R of the integers. Okay, and each copy, well, I guess another way, more precisely, I should write, if you take the projection in the upper, the minimal projection in the upper left corner of the first matrix algebra there, and you take its K0 class, then this sumand is generated by that K0 class. Okay? And then similarly for the others. E11R. Okay? And then for the same algebra, K0 plus is just, well, it has a similar structure except with Z plus instead of Z. That's sort of the general first quadrant ordering. Okay? And then the class, this is also important, where does the class of the unit of the algebra go? It goes to the R tuple N1 into to NR. So it's the class of the unit in the C-star algebra which records the sizes of the various matrix blocks. Okay? So in fact, if you have the K0 group and with this data, so the K0 group, its order structure, and the class of the unit, and you know you're talking about a finite dimensional C-star algebra, you know exactly which finite dimensional C-star algebra you're talking about up to isomorphism. For instance, in the case of purely infinite C-star algebras, like a simple C-star algebra in which every projection is infinite, then you have this kind of problem. So for instance, in the Kunth algebra O2, I mean, in fact, you have that any projection is equivalent to a proper subprojection of itself. Or rather, in Kunth algebras O n, or any one of these Kirchberg algebras. And so right, so this virtually never implies equality.
What does the partial order mean? Given two elements, either
it's just an order on the. I mean, it's a reflexive and transitive and anti-symmetric relation. On the whole K0 group in this case. I mean, it comes from K0 plus. I mean, you define the relation in terms of K0 plus, so you say that y is less equal to x if x minus y is in K0 plus.
Yes, but
I would say that partial order and pre-order, you know? No. I mean, a pre-order is something which is just, a pre-order is just reflexive and transitive, but doesn't satisfy this third condition, anti-symmetry, which is what makes a pre-order an order. So some people call, might as well just call it an order, but some people, for historical reasons, sometimes call this a partial order. I mean, to differentiate it from total orders. et cetera. Okay. Right, and then the last thing is that cancellation of projections. And in fact, I only mentioned this at the end of the last class. A is said to have, people most often just say that the C-star algebra A has cancellation, and the missing words are of projections. If P is equivalent to Q whenever P O plus direct sum R is equivalent to Q direct sum R for projections P Q. So the idea is that if after taking a direct sum with some third projection R, you can prove that P and Q are equivalent, then it means that P and Q had to be equivalent in the first place. You can cancel this projection R on both sides. It's not always the case that a C-star algebra has this property, but it is a very common property. In particular, it certainly always holds in a finite dimensional C-star algebra and more generally in an AF C-star algebra. Actually, this property always holds when you have a property called stable rank 1, which is the condition that the invertible elements in the C-star algebra are dense. So if you have a unital C-star algebra and the invertibles are dense, then you definitely have this cancellation of projections. And this stable rank 1 is a fairly common property. So what I'll say is that AF algebras have this property.
AF algebras are stably finite and have
cancellation of projections. Okay, so these are the essential bits of information that we covered last week that we will now use to do the classification theorem for unital AF algebras. Okay. So the first thing that we're going to do let me outline the strategy here just on the side. We're going to be looking at a couple of inductive sequences. Limit A, another one with limit B. Okay? And what we're going to assume is that there's an isomorphism between the ordered K0 groups of A and B. All right? We're going to try to prove that the algebras are isomorphic. And what we really need, or what certainly suffices, is if you can find star homomorphisms like this, okay, star homomorphisms down and back up, right, so lacing this diagram together so that all of the triangles commute, so that the diagram is commutative. And this definitely does define a morphism between the limit algebra. So these maps down, these psi i's, right, they form a sort of coherent sequence of maps from the a i's to the b i's, and you can show that this defines a morphism from A to B. We're not going to write down all the details. This is a fairly straightforward exercise, but you then only have to check that the morphism is injective and surjective, and then you will be done. Okay? But if, in fact, you have this morphism in both directions, then this is enough. So the idea is that we want to get to the point where we have a commuting diagram like this. We have our two limits of a finite dimensional algebras, and we want to construct a commuting diagram like this. If we can do that, It's an exercise, which you should carry out if you can. It's a very good one. But this means you have to have isomorphism. And this, I guess this idea is due to Eliot. So this is the so-called Eliot intertwining argument for classifying inductive limit C-star algebras. And it can be pushed fairly far. But that's our strategy. We just want to, if we can get to this picture, then we will be in business. So this brings us to this idea here, local existence and uniqueness. Okay, so what does local existence and uniqueness mean? What it means is that we're only going to start with an isomorphism between K0 of A and K0 of B. And what we're going to first do is so that can be pulled back through the whole diagram at the level of K0, so that we can get this commuting diagram that we would like at the level of C-star algebras, at least we can get it at the level of K0. And then what you want to show, once you have this diagram at the level of K0, you want to show that the map between K0 of A1 and K0 of B1 can be lifted. All right? So this is an existence theorem. If you have a map at the level of K0 between two finite dimensional C-star algebras, it can be lifted to a real star homomorphism. So that's the local existence. And then what are you going to have? Suppose you had a diagram at the level of K0, and you lifted all of those maps at the level of K0 to real star homomorphisms. You would still not be done because these triangles need not commute at that point. You've just shown that there is some lift, but their relationship to one another is not known yet. So the next thing that you have to do is you have to show what is called local uniqueness. So you would at least know that having lifted these maps, that this triangle here, this first one, for instance, commutes at the level of K0. If you can prove that two maps which agree at the level of K0 are, in fact, up to conjugation by a unitary, by an inner automorphism, actually the same star homomorphism, then what you do is you simply take this map, which might not have made the diagram commute, and you conjugate it by that unitary. You sort of correct the diagram in each triangle inductively as you go along. And the result will be a genuinely commuting diagram at the level of C-star algebras, which will give you the conclusion that you want. Okay, so that is the local uniqueness theorem, that a map between two finite dimensional C-star algebras, which agrees, two maps which agree at the level of K0, must be inner equivalent. Okay? So that's what we have to prove. And in fact, what's most important about the local existence and uniqueness is the fact that the source algebra, the one you're starting with, is finite dimensional. The requirements on target algebra can be fairly modest. So this is somehow the key technical lemma which makes the classification of AF algebras go. So we let A be a finite dimensional C-star algebra. And let B be a unital C-star algebra with this property, cancellation of projections. And this really is the most important property that it has to have. And then we have two statements. The first is this local existence. So if alpha from K0 of A to K0 of B is a positive group homomorphism, such that the following is satisfied. If you look at the image of the K0 class of the unit of A, that must at least be less equal to the K0 class of the unit of B. Then there exists a star homomorphism, phi from A to B, such that K0 of phi is equal to alpha. So in other words, you can lift the morphism at the level of K0 groups.
And if alpha is actually unit preserving, then phi is necessarily unital.
I guess the purpose is it would be enough to know that there is a unital lift, but it turns out always to be unital. Okay, and then the second statement is that if phi and chi from A to B are star homomorphisms, then they agree at the level of K0, chi, if and only if there exists a unitary U in B such that, say, phi is equal to add U composed with chi. So this add U, it's just add U of X is equal to UX U star. It's just the inner automorphism coming from the unitary U. Okay, so to prove this, so for part A, first we will show that if G1 through GN are elements of K0 B plus, or in other words, if these are elements of the K0 group of B, which come from some projection in some matrix algebra over B, and they moreover satisfy that the sum of them is less equal to the K0 class of the unit of B, then there exist orthogonal projections P1 through Pn, which live actually in B, not in a matrix algebra over B, but really in the C star algebra B, such that these projections realize the specified K0 classes. Okay? So for this, it is enough to show the following statement, which upon iteration will give you what you want. If P is a projection, so remember this is supposed to denote projections. So P is a projection in B, and G is in K0 of B plus, and G is less equal to the K0 class of 1B minus P, then there exists a projection Q in P of B such that two things hold. Q is, first of all, really less equal to 1B minus P and therefore is orthogonal to P. And in the class of Q is equal to G. Right? So that's what we have to do. Okay, so so then let's find projections. So find E and F, which a priori will just be in the projections in the n by n matrices whose entries are from B. So if this Pn of B denotes projections in Mn of B,
such that the class of E is equal to G, and the class of F is equal to the following positive, by assumption, element of K0. Right? So then, if you take the direct sum of those two projections, the direct sum, this is equal to the sum of the K0 classes, that is equal to the class 1B minus P. Okay? And here we are going to use the fact that the target algebra B has cancellation of projections. So the fact that this and this agree means that they're actually Murray von Neumann equivalent. There exists V in MN of B such that V E plus F V star is actually equal to 1B minus T. Right? Okay. And here is this partial isometry, V. So V is necessarily a partial isometry. And its range, the range projection here is 1B minus P. In particular, the range projection of this partial isometry, V, lives inside the C star algebra B as opposed to in some matrix algebra over B, right? The source projection for V may not, but the range projection does. So then what we do is we set Q equal to V E O plus 0 V star. Okay? And since this is clearly less equal to this, right? And this is less equal to 1B minus T. You can check that Q is a projection, and it's almost by definition, it's equivalent to E. Okay? So this equation here really says that E and Q are Murray von Neumann equivalent. So this Q has class equal to G and is orthogonal. Okay, so that does it for this first thing that we wanted, right? The sum of K0 elements can be represented by orthogonal projections. Right. So now, over here. Now, my assumption we have following that our map alpha at the level of K0 takes the K0 class of the unit of A to something which is less equal to the K0 class of the unit of B. And we can represent this, right? Alpha, this is equal to alpha of, well, E11, the class of E11 to the K, plus the class of E22 to the K, plus, and you just add up all the minimal, the K0 classes of all the various minimal diagonal projections in all of the matrix blocks of A. So A has this decomposition as a direct sum of matrix algebras, and there are these canonical minimal diagonal projections. You add up the K0 classes of all of those, and that is the K0 class of the unit of the algebra. So that's how we're going to write it out here. E, this will be, I guess, N1. Oh, this is not K. This is 1. 1. 1. Hopefully we get the idea. E, 1, 1, R, E. N R. So you add up all of those,
And because it's alpha is a homomorphism, that's the same as taking the sum of the images. And because alpha is a positive group homomorphism, what this really is the sum over all I K of alpha of E I. Okay, where the indices are sort of chosen suitably. I'm not being too careful there, but okay. And this is less equal to the unit, the class of the unit of B. Right. So then what we do is we take our result over here that we just proved, and we find for every one of these alpha of the K0 class of some minimal projection, some element, some projection in the target algebra, such that all of the elements we get are orthogonal. So find F I K. Your K runs from 1 to R, and I runs from 1 to NK. Orthogonal projections such that the K0 classes of these orthogonal projections are exactly the images of the corresponding projections from A, corresponding index-wise. Right? Now we have the following. We know that A, or EII, fixed sum K, we know that alpha of this is equal to alpha of EJJ. Okay. Because all of those diagonal minimal projections are Murray von Neumann equivalent. They're unitarily equivalent. Just flip them on the diagonal. and this implies that for a fixed K, these projections that I have just found in B all have the same K0 class. And by the fact that B has cancellation of projections, it means, in fact, that FIIK is Murray von Neumann equivalent to FJJ of K for a fixed K. And so one of the little lemmas about finite dimensional C-star algebras that we did talk about last week is the fact that if you have a family of orthogonal projections indexed as such, and if for a fixed K you always have Murray von Neumann equivalence between all the indices here, then that system of orthogonal projections naturally extends to a system of matrix units or a finite dimensional C-star algebra, and you get the other matrix units by looking at the partial isometries which implement these various equivalences. Okay, so that's an exercise. We went over it last time, but so my previous lemma, the FIIKs extend to a system of matrix units FIJK in B, and then we can just define our star homomorphism phi from A to B in the obvious way. You just send phi of EIJK to FIJK. Okay? And by construction, This map phi induces the right map at the level of K0. This is exactly how it was chosen. So K0 phi is equal to alpha by construction. And so we have this list. The last thing that we want to show from the lemma is that if the original map alpha preserves the K0 class of the unit, then phi is actually unital. I mean, if P is equal to phi of the sum over all I, K, it's just the image of the unit. Then we have the following. We have that the class of the unit of B minus the class of T is equal to zero, right? These things, because C induces alpha at the level of K0, and alpha preserves the class of the unit, all right? So that means that 1 minus T is equal to 0, which means that the projection 1 minus T is equivalent to 0 by cancellation. And the only way something can be equivalent to 0 is if it's actually 0. Okay? So T is necessarily unipreserving whenever the K0 map is unipreserving. So that's the first part of the lemma, the local existence. Now let's do the... the local uniqueness is much more straightforward. In fact, it's more or less obvious that if you have one thing, right, if you know that C and C differ only by conjugation by some unitary element, then it's pretty clear that they're going to have to agree on the K0 group, because K0 classes are stable under unitary conjugation, right? So, I mean, I will leave it as a more or less straightforward exercise for you to prove that this implies this. So let's just assume the opposite, that they agree on K0. So assume K0 of C is equal to K0 of C, right? And then we have, at the level of K0, we have that class of C of E11K is equal to the class of C of E11K. And we also have that the class of 1 minus C of, so 1B, minus the image of the units under C, that's equal to the class 1 minus C. Okay? And this is for all K. So, again, we use this cancellation of projections. There exist partial isometries V sub K and W such that, well, they implement these equalities at the level of K0. VK star VK, that's equal to V of E11K. VK VK star is C of E11K. And 1B minus C of 1A. Okay, B minus C of 1A. Okay, so we have these partial isometries. So what I'll do is I'll just tell you how to build this unitary U, and that will be good enough. The checking that it's a unitary which intertwines the two maps is fairly straightforward. So for each I, one checks that, okay, so what is it? It should be VK C1I, okay, C of EI1, okay, so is it one of these is an I, the one on the outside is an I here, the one the outside is an I here. So you have to check that this is a partial isometry, always. And then you just make the following definition. You set U equal to this partial isometry W plus the sum of all these partial isometries here.
subtract that u star equals u star u equals 1b, and let's see, how does this go? Well, it's one way or the other. I mean, it's either u or u star. Okay, so it's fairly straightforward to just calculate that this is unitary and that it does the right thing. So that gives you the local uniqueness there, local existence and local uniqueness. And I guess maybe we should take a break for 10 minutes. Come back and do the rest of the proof. Okay. So, maybe I'll leave this lemma up here. And now, so now what we're going to do is prove a lemma, which is really the key to taking an isomorphism between the K0 groups of two AF algebras and pulling it back to the K0 groups of the algebras in the sequence, defining the AF algebras, and moreover intertwining those two sequences of K0 groups. All right? So we need a sort of technical lemma to achieve this. Okay. So let this be an inductive, let's say a unital. We want everything to be unital for convenience. A unital inductive sequence of finite dimensional C star algebras with limit A, and I will also make explicit these maps, right? So with the inductive limit comes a whole sequence of maps with mu n. This is the canonical morphism from the nth stage into the limit algebra. Okay, so let B be another finite dimensional C star algebra and suppose that we have unital positive group homomorphisms will be alpha, and that goes from the K0 group of the first algebra in the sequence, A1, into the K0 group of B, and another map, gamma, which goes from the K0 group of B into the K0 group of the limit algebra A, and these maps satisfy the following. If you look at this diagram here, this is mu K0 of mu 1, K0 of A. This diagram should commute gamma alpha. Okay? Well, then, there exists some natural number and a unital positive homomorphism beta from the K0 group of B to the K0 group of AN. Such that this diagram commutes, and all you do is that you insert K0 of AN there in the middle, and beta is this map up from K0 of B, and you just want this whole diagram to commute, right? What are these maps? Well, this will be K0 of, I'm going to call it, that's mu n, sorry. And this map is K0 of what I will call C1, comma n. Right? So let me just say Cn, comma m should be equal to the composition of Cn minus 1, Cn minus 2, to Cm. So
These are the compositions of the bonding mats in the inductive sequence. So what's the idea here? It's in our AS classification situation, we're going to have a map from K0 of some limit algebra into K0 of A, and that K0 of the limit algebra is going to be the inductive limit of a bunch of K0 groups, right? So we will definitely have this map gamma by going into K0 of our limit algebra and up into K0 of A. And we would like to actually be able to pull that back to some finite stage to intertwine the diagram. So that's the purpose of this kind of diagram chase-y, but it's not totally trivial. So, okay. So, let's set yk to be equal to gamma of the class of E11K. Where these EIJKs are matrix units for B. So these are somehow the canonical generators of K0 of B, and therefore, you know, if we know, I mean, these generate the image of gamma. Okay? By the continuity of K0, we have that K0 of A is equal to a union over all J of K0 of UJ, K0 AJ. So when you take the inductive limit of K0 groups, the category of these countable abelian groups, then it actually, as a set, is definitely just the union of the images of the various stage maps. Okay, so that means that any finite set of elements in K0 of A already occur, these are already the images of a finite set of elements at some finite stage, right? So there exists some natural number M such that and XK in and even more is true. Sorry, it's not just the continuity of K0. In fact, it's continuous not only as a group functor, but as a preordered group functor. And, in fact, the positive cone of the limit algebra is also the union of the images of the positive cones. Therefore, I can find some natural number M and XK in K0 of AM plus such that K0 of mu M of XK is equal to yk, right? So let's define a map beta prime. This is sort of a precursor to the map beta that we're going to get eventually. It's going to be possibly deficient in one way that we'll see. So this is going to go from K0 of B to K0 of A M. And we define this by beta prime of the class of E11 of K's. That should just be equal to this XK. All right? Now, why does this work? Well, the K0 group of B is a free abelian finitely generated group. All I have to do is tell you where the generators go. So there's one and only one group homomorphism that satisfies this condition. Moreover, this is automatically positive, and that's because we know exactly what the K0 group of a finite dimensional C-star algebra looks like, right? It's generated by these guys, right? The sort of Z plus cones generated by these guys. We take the direct sum of those. E prime is positive.
since x in k0, let's just say x in k0 of b plus implies that x is equal to some, let's say, lambda 1 class of e111 plus to lambda r class of e11r, which implies that theta prime of x is the same coefficients with these x's r, xr, right?
And so this is a positive integral linear combination of positive elements in the target group, and therefore positive. So we have a map beta prime. So we have an m here and a beta prime here, and what we do have at least is that this commutes now. This definition of beta prime, but we don't know that this commutes yet. So I'm painting myself into a corner here.
I have that k0 of mu m applied to beta prime alpha minus k0 of phi 1 m. This is equal to gamma composed of alpha minus k0 1 is equal to 0. Okay?
But what we don't know is the following. We don't know, so let g1 and gn be positive generators of k0 of a1, and then we want to look at what happens. So we have, all right, get me here. Okay, so again, by the continuity, of K0, we have that the kernel, right, the kernel of this map K0 of mu m, this is equal to the union over all n greater or equal to m of the kernel of k0 of c m n, right? So the idea is that if you have something in a m, in the mth stage, and some k0 element, and its image is 0 in the limit, then its image must already be 0 if you go far enough out in the sequence, right? So this is what the continuity of k0 says. And then, right, so that means that, right, so beta prime composed with alpha minus k0 of mu m of, or k0 of phi 1 m, right? So this alpha goes from k0 of a1 to k0 of b, this goes from k0 of b back to k0 of am, and this is the usual map from A1 to AM in the inductive sequence. Right, so if you apply this to the generators, right, then by this statement here, Okay? We know that all of these guys are in the kernel of this K0 mu m thing. Therefore, at some finite stage, these are all already, so this is in the kernel of K0 of mu m. So by this continuity statement here, in fact, this is already zero if you apply just the K0 map from m to some sufficiently large n. All right? And for some n greater than m, K0 of C, m, n of these things here, beta prime composed of alpha minus K0 C1M Ti is equal to zero for all I. Alright? And so what you do then is you actually just to take for beta, you just compose beta prime with this map here, K0 phi M N. And that will give you commutativity on all the triangles that you want. Finally, define beta equal to K0 phi m n composed with beta prime. So then this gives the desired conclusion. Oh, well, there it is up there. Okay? So when we started out, when we just had AM there, we just had the last triangle commuting, but not the first one, so we corrected that by pushing out further in the sequence somehow. Okay? So the desired diagram. Okay. So that's the last sort of technical lemma that we need. And now we can state the classification theorem. Due to Elliott, I guess around 1976 maybe. So, two unital AF algebras, A and B, are isomorphic. If and only if there exists a order and order unit preserving isomorphism at the level of the K0 groups, alpha. So you have to keep track of not just the K0 group of A, not just its positive cone, but also one last piece of information, and that is the distinguished class of the unit. And the same for B. So order preserving means, well, it means order preserving, but the order unit preserving just means sends the class of this to here. Okay? So that's when they're isomorphic, and moreover, yes. Okay, I'm sorry. So I'm implying here that it should be a, let's just say that. It should be a group homomorphism, but it's A. Isomorphism of of ordered groups. With order unit. Tough crowd. Okay. Any such isomorphism can be lifted to a star isomorphism C from A to B. Right, so it's one thing to say that they're isomorphic if and only if they have isomorphic K-groups, but that it's actually stronger to say that, moreover, every isomorphism of K-groups lifts to a star isomorphism between the algebras. Okay. So that's what we want to prove. And where are the two? I didn't erase them, did I? Right, so I have it. No, I erased it. Oh, okay, so let's start over here. Well, I will say that if A isomorphic to B, then there exists alpha. As required, this is just, this is not the hard part of the theorem, right? So we really want to show that you assume that there's some alpha and you want to lift it, okay? So assume alpha. Well, is an ordered group isomorphism from K0 of A to K0 B. So let's write down the... Alright, so what I'm going to say next is not entirely trivial, but not hard to say. A priori in AF algebra is just something which is an inductive limit of AF algebras. But if it is unital to AF algebra, then it is an inductive limit of unital AF algebras with unital connecting them. So, fix unital inductive sequences sequences, and then from that, applying the K0 functor and our assumption about isomorphism, this gives K0 of A1, K0 of F1, K0 of A2, all the way to K0 of A, and then here we have alpha inverse, right? And you have K0 of B. K0 of G2. This diagram, and I'm going to, just for convenience, I'm going to add K0 of B0, which is just going to be the complex numbers. And here, I'll call this G0. So G0 from C to B1, and we'll say C0 from C0 from C to A1, the unique unital cell homomorphisms. So then I claim that basically upon passing to a subsequence, I can intertwine this diagram. So the idea is that, so I had this this lemma, statement of which I've now covered up, but anyways, in our previous lemma we had, for instance, we had A1, and then we could take, let's start here. You start here. This is our first finite dimensional algebra, an inductive sequence, and we know that we have some other finite dimensional algebra, say this one, right? And by composing all of these maps, I have a map all the way into K0 of B, and moreover, I have a map here, which is K0 of C0, right? So I have really the setup for that previous lemma, okay, where this is the inductive sequence here, and this is the isolated finite dimensional C star algebra. And what did that lemma say? It said that I could find some finite stage in this sequence and a map from K0 of A1 down to that finite stage such that the whole diagram still commutes. Right? But this may require, I cannot necessarily find that map from K0 of A1 to K0 of B1 or even B2. I may have to go some distance out in the inductive sequence. But that doesn't matter. Right? So the idea is that you would do that, find a map out here and then this one. And then you apply it again, right, starting with now this will be the inductive sequence and this will be the sort of isolated finite dimensional algebra and the lemma. And again, you apply the lemma to find a map from here to some sufficiently far out stage in this sequence such that the whole diagram commutes and repeat. Go down, go up, go down, go up. So I don't really want to, you know, write this down with a lot of notation because I think it won't really make life miserable, but the idea is that if I pass to a subsequence, I can intertwine these two diagrams, so I might as well assume that I have already passed to the subsequence, right? And I have found maps here. What will I call these? Alpha 1, beta 1, alpha 2, beta 2. Okay? So my previous lemma upon, compressing the sequences K0 AI and K0 of VI. If necessary, there exist alpha I, beta I, and these are positive group homomorphisms or unit preserving, as in the conclusion of the lemma. So there's positive unital group homomorphisms such that the diagram above commutes. Okay, and now the rest of the work and the proof is just done by this local existence and uniqueness lemma that we proved earlier. I'm really not doing well with the organization here. well, I will write it here. Okay. Now, by our local existence
dilemma. There exist star homomorphisms. Let's see, what are we calling? Phi J, and that should go from B sub J to A sub J plus 1, and C J should go from A sub J, B sub J. Let's put primes on these. And what properties do these have? Well, they are they are the lists of these maps here. So K0 of K0 of phi j prime is one from that's going to be the list of beta sub j. K0 of CJ prime alpha sub J. Okay, so I can list them. The problem is that if I take this whole diagram and I erase all the K0s and I replace the alphas and betas with these star homomorphisms, and the diagram does not necessarily commute, so we have to fix that. So what do we have? We have that the K0 of FJ, say, which would go from AJ, so that would be the same as K0 of CJ prime composed with CJ prime. Now we use, so there exists by local uniqueness. Say U, where is the U sub J and A sub J plus 1 such that this map FJ is actually equal to CJ composed with CJ prime, where CJ is conjugation. It's the original CJ prime composed with conjugation by this unitary UJ. Okay. But in fact, what you want to do is just start at the very beginning then, okay, and choose these unitaries, not as I have chosen it here just for 1J, but start at the beginning, then choose U0, U1, choose these inductively. So similarly, there exists VJ in B sub J. Unitary in B sub J such that G sub J will be equal to CJ plus CJ prime. Okay, so in other words, at any one triangle, you can fix this by choosing the right unitary. So what I will say is that, by choosing UJ, VJ, alternately, inductively, we can arrange with these definitions I've made. We can, in fact, arrange FJ, CJ composed of CJ, CJ. Okay. All right.
So, in other words, I mean, with this little observation and choosing them one after the other, successively modifying each triangle as you go along, then you can actually get all the triangles you want to commute. And that proves isomorphism. Okay, so as I mentioned at the beginning of the lecture, this is all you need to establish in order to get the isomorphism between the limit algebras. These coherent sequences of maps, right, these lifts of these K0 maps, which then commute at the level of algebras, define a morphism between the inductive limit algebras, which you can check is an isomorphism, which we're not going to do all the details. So, that is the end of the classification for AF algebras. So the key idea there is this idea of local existence and uniqueness. And this can be pushed further in lots of other cases, but other invariants enter the picture. So in the last bit of the class here, I'd like to comment on some of those situations. Right. So... So, how far can intertwining be pushed? So here's an example. Let's take AI, that will be M sub 2 to the N. And the entries of this matrix algebra, rather than complex numbers, are going to be continuous complex-valued functions on the interval. All right, and let's consider two different inductive systems. So I'll give you two different lists of maps. So phi I from AI to AI plus 1 is going to be given by phi I of F is equal to F evaluated at, say, from X. Xi. Direct sum. Put it this way. F xi. Okay, so this function f is some 2 to the I by 2 to the I matrix valued function on the interval, and all I do is I take that function, I evaluate it at some point in the interval, and what I get out of that is a map. Okay, by stacking up two copies of that. Now, the first thing I want to point out is that this thing may, if you want to get a simple limit out of this, you have to be pretty careful about how you choose these points. So what we will do is we will assume that, and this is sort of a fun exercise, but you just take a sequence of points in the interval, which returns to any given open set infinitely many times, right? And you take this to be the sequence of points, xi, that you use. And then what you can check is that no matter which function you start with at ai, if you compose enough of these maps, then eventually what happens, eventually one of these point evaluations you make will be, is going to be, oh wait now, sorry, this is actually already finite dimensional. It's different if you take this to be the identity, but I don't want to do that yet. That's what I want to do in the next one. Sorry, this is already finite dimensional. If you take the function, you evaluate it at xi, then the image of the algebra m2 to the I, c0, 1, after you evaluate all the functions at some point xi, is just the matrix algebra, m to the I. So the image here is finite dimensional. So, in fact, it follows that the inductive limit you get with these phi i's is an AF algebra. In fact, it's what's called a UHF algebra. So we don't need any. So these maps give an AF algebra. on the other hand, you do something like this, and here you may have to just define, rather than define each psi, I may only define the composed maps, so in big jumps. So let's define phi I n, phi 1 n of f to be the following. It's going to be f of x, and that's going to occur down the diagonal. How many times? That will be 2 to the n minus 1 times. And then right down here in the corner, I will just put f, evaluate it at some point, xi. Okay? And similarly, I will, the next time I define a map, I will only define phi n 2 to the n in the same way. Okay? So, by stacking up almost everything as just the identity map, and then in this last corner, I will have the original function evaluated at some point. Now, here, rather, is where it's important that you choose some sequence of points xi, which returns to any open set infinitely many times. If you choose such a sequence of points, what's important about that? The important thing about that is that the inductive limit algebra you get with the same matrix over the same building blocks with these different connecting maps is still a simple C-star algebra. Okay? And the reason for that is that all you have to make sure of to get a simple C-star algebra in the inductive limit is that if you start with any function at any stage, then eventually the image of that function is everywhere non-zero in some later stage. Okay? That means that the image of the function generates the whole later block as a closed two-sided ideal. And in order for that to happen, all you need to know is that eventually, somehow, you're going to take some function, and by pushing it far enough in your sequence of maps, you're going to evaluate that function at a point where it is non-zero. If the function's non-zero at all, it's non-zero on some open set, and therefore, if you choose this sequence of points xi to return to any open set infinitely many times, then eventually, the image of some function that you start with at ai, its later image will generate all of a sub j. And therefore, you get a simple inductive limit. So both limits so what I want to point out here is that what will happen is we will get two simple C-star algebras. Using the two same building blocks to two different kinds of connecting maps, we will get two simple C-star algebras, both of which have the same K0 group, but they differ in terms of an invariant called the tracial state space. All right, so this is one of the invariants that one needs to keep track of. Both limits are simple C-star algebras with K0 equal to the dyadic rationals. Okay? So that's a fun calculation. The difference between these two algebras are distinguished by what's called their tracial state spaces. Okay, so the tracial state space of A, this is all the states. States tau on A such that tau of xy equals tau of yx for all xy in A. Okay? So, in the case of the case of the AF algebra, the tracial state space of A is just, in fact, a point. There's a unique tracial state on that AF algebra. But in the other case, the tracial state space of A, how I write this, is actually corresponds to the state of all regular Borel probability measures on the interval. Okay? So the tracial state space of just the plain old commutative C star algebra, C of 0, 1, is the space of all these probability measures on C 0, 1. And by constructing things as I have done here, you can compute the tracial state space of the limit algebra, and it's actually the same as C 0, 1. So, I mean, I won't do the calculation here, but what happens is that a map forward between two C star algebras here induces a natural map backwards between the tracial state spaces. So the tracial state space of the limit C star algebra is an inverse limit of the tracial state spaces at each state. And given the fairly simple structure of the map I've defined here, you can actually compute directly what the maps at the level of traces are in the reverse direction for these maps, and you can see, grind away, that this is what you get. Okay, so the point is that even for simple C-star algebras, even for ones that are built out of some fairly straightforward building blocks, already K0 is not enough to distinguish all the isomorphism classes. Okay, I guess this was observed fairly early on, maybe by Klaus, was it Klaus? Klaus Thompson. Yeah, so Klaus Thompson observed this. Which might initially make you think that, well, I don't know, I mean, maybe things are much, much tougher as soon as you're outside of the AF case. But remarkably, what turns out to be the case is that if you have any inductive limit of matrix algebras over the interval, and you require that it's uniform and simple, then if you take the K0 group and you add this invariant, the tracial state space, then that really is enough to classify them up to isomorphism. So although you do have to add it, it seems to be enough. So I won't state that theorem explicitly, but I'm just trying to introduce a couple of new invariants that we'll need before, in the next class, I tell you what the classifying invariant is for a very large class of C-star algebras. Okay, so the first piece that you will need, definitely in any general classification theorem, is going to be this tracial state space. The other piece is called the K1 group. This basically keeps track of unitaries up to homotopy. Let me just define it first. So let A be a unital C star algebra. And U of A, its unitary group, and let's write UN of A for the unitary group of MN of A, and we'll say U infinity of A. That should be the nested union of all these UNs, nested where this UN of A is included in the upper left corner of UN plus 1 of A. Okay, so in fact this object doesn't really consist of unitaries in any good sense. However, this union, on this union you can define a nice equivalence relation. So if U and V are in UN, which of course is a subset of this U infinity of A, if U is in UN and V is in UM, they could a priori be unitaries in different size matrix algebras over A, we write that U is equivalent to V if U directs sum with, I guess, I'll write it this way, 1 minus the unit of K minus N dimensional matrices is homotopic to V direct sum, the unit of the K minus M dimensional matrices in some U K of A, where of course K is greater or equal to M and N. So you ask whether by viewing U and V as sitting inside some sufficiently large piece of this, if you like, and by adding on sort of the right thing in order to make U and V unitaries inside that bigger U sub K, right? Because they don't really live in here. You have to add something to them to make them unitaries. If by adding this kind of, you can think of this as some sort of a sufficiently or correctly sized trivial piece, you find that they are homotopic, then we're going to say that they are equivalent. Okay? And so K1 of A, in general, this is, and here we're assuming A is unital, and you just take U infinity of A, and you mod out by this equivalence relation. Okay? We're sort of at the end of the class here, but I will say quickly, and maybe write down at the end of the next class, that this K1 of A is not just some set of equivalence classes similar to K0. It has a nice abelian group structure. Okay, so it's what it is. And this, so for example, in the case of continuous functions on the circle, K1 of the circle is the integers, and what it records is the winding number. So it really records classes of unitaries up to homotopy. That's how you should think of it. And this also turns out to be an essential invariant for distinguishing unital simple C-star algebras in general. Okay? So what is really surprising is that K0, the traces, and K1 actually turn out to be sufficient for determining simple C-star algebras up to isomorphism in huge generality. Okay? So I'll talk more about that next time. Thank you.